Okay, now I'm recording. Because this is important to remember. This is important to record for posterity. Okay. Mrs. Roberg asked, and you know, she asked the question, how can we have such a thing called, how can we participate in this melting program where we have Orthodox and mostly conservative and reform, and I'm supposed to teach alongside them? Don't I legitimize them by participating? That's what you're asking, more or less, correct?
No. I wanted to ask a question.
Yeah.
What is it all about nowadays? Because
the Melton program?
In United Hebrew Schools, they have on the agenda, do we introduce it into our curriculum or not? And Alex Rober got up and he said, no way!
What did he want to introduce into the curriculum?
This the way of looking that everything that happens in the Torah is happening like a Kriya Shamsi.
Yeah. You know, that's not the Melton, but that's not the goal of the Melton program. The Melton program is just an educational program that's run by Federation, and anybody who wants to teach it to come and learn from can go and learn from. It's not specifically one stream or the other. It depends on whoever's teaching it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now I'll quote you. So on Thursday night, I learned with a man from a book called Em Habanim Semecha. Em Habanim Semecha is a very, very important book. It's translated to English. It was written by a man named Rabbi Teichel. You can see his picture here. Rabbi Teichel was, literally, he was like a Sakmer. He lived in the early 1900s. I don't know where he lived, in Poland. Rabbi Teichel. He was as anti-Zionist as they come. He was virulently anti-Zionist. And during the Shoah, during the Holocaust, he had a change of heart. And he really felt strongly that he had made a mistake, and that the only hope for the Jewish people was in the land of Israel.
That's true.
He happens to be right.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a book, this book called Em Habanim Semecha. This book is the primer, the Bible of religious Zionism. If you want to know anything about religious Zionism, you first have to read this book. And he quotes Midrash and Chumash and Drashos and Gemaras and Poskim, you know, up the wazoo, left and right, here, you know, all over the place. We're in the middle of chapter 3. I've been learning it for 2 years now on Thursday nights. Tell all of your husbands to come, men only, right? So in the middle of chapter 3, it's a fantastic cheer, first of all because it's a lot of fun, and also a lot of discussions come out of it, like we're about to have right now. So there was a man named the Minchas Eliezer. There was a rabbi who wrote a book called the Minchas Eliezer. And the Minchas Eliezer said that you cannot participate in the Zionist movement. Why? He said for a number of different reasons. So Rabbi Teichel went through a bunch of those. But then he wrote, Mrs. Burke, can I ask you to close the door if you don't mind? Okay. The Minchas Eliezer wrote, Shilididei pshita kol kach. It's simple, it makes sense. Shiyan shibonei ha'aretiz manenu. Those people who participate, who build the land of Israel. Who was building the land of Israel in the 1930s and 40s? The secular Zionists, the Chalutim. So said the Minchas Eliezer, listen, even if you tell me that Israel is important religiously, who's building the land of Israel? What kind of people are they? What kind of Israel do they want to build? They want to build a secular state of Israel. Did they? Yes, they did. He says, therefore, Ein histateif imahem klau b'shum inyan shel binyan ha'aretz. You can't participate. If they're going to build it, look what they're going to build. So therefore, how can I participate in such a thing if that's the thing that they're building? He says, b'haynu disvaratohu, his svar is, his logic is, d'mutav shena azov et ha'aretz b'yadam, let them have Israel, si'asubam kechefzam u'kemucham, let them do what they want. We're going to participate in what they do to build the secular state of Israel. Understand their logic. How can I participate? Look what they're doing. Look what kind of state they want to build. Look at Meretz. They want to get rid of, you know, any religion, any mention of Judaism in the Jewish state. Look at what that is. So therefore, it says in Minchas Eliezer, how can I participate? He says, Gam kein zos uchal lahavim, lo uchal lahavim. Listen, Mrs. Snow, listen to what he says. Listen to what he says. Am I low? What does that mean, am I low? Why not? Why not? Now, that's the first question I said to Mrs. Snow, and I say it to people all the time. When somebody says to you, how can you do such a thing? Your first question should be,
why not?
Why not? And by the way, this is before, when we had the discussion, this is before I had even seen this. But he wrote this 50 years ago. Why not? This Lama, he said, if you could say that if im anu nimshoch yadeinu miyabinyan, let's say we say we're not going to participate, then they would say gam hei nimshichu yadeinu miyabinyan, and then they'd say, okay, if the firm isn't going to participate, we're not going to do it either. Then you can say, okay, then we're not going to have anything to do with it because they only want to build the secular state of Israel. Then you could say he's right. Then it's better not to build it sinfully than to build the state of Israel this way. Right? But he says I'm not sure that's true either. Talks about it, etc., etc. But this is not the shir. Aval ke'et shehem lo yimshichu yideihem mihabinyan arzid lakeim. If we say we're not going to participate, what are they going to say?
We'll build it ourselves.
We'll do it ourselves. No problem. They did it anyway without us. Let's say we don't participate. We don't involve ourselves. We don't immerse ourselves. So we say, you're going to build that secular state? I don't want anything to do with it. Oh no, there's not going to be any Torah in it. There's not going to be any sanctity in it. There's not going to be any holiness in it. V'ulai, maybe, ayyidei hishtatfut shel yureyim, maybe, if those God-fearing people would participate, ya'aleh b'yadam be'ezras Hashem, l'fosia yagam, l'gamrei alpi ruach ha-Torah. And maybe if the firm participate, maybe somebody will say, well, maybe we should do this the right way. Maybe we should participate. Aval k'shiyamdu ha-yureyim l'gamrei b'bachut. But when all those God-fearing people say, no, no, we're going to stay on the outside. I don't have anything to do with that. Hakol me'ezav yadam l'chud. And you know what? You guys take care of everything. You build your own state. You build your own temple. You build your own federation. You build your own Jewish community. And we don't have anything to do with it. And of course it's going to be against the values of the Torah. What did you expect? How could you expect them to do anything otherwise? If you stayed on the outside. We see this is true. What happened as soon as the Zionist movement arose? The Zionist movement arose as a reaction to the religious. They said, we don't want to have anything to do with the religious, we're going to be Zionist instead. That's exactly what happened. Right? That's precisely what happened. So you know what the religious said? The religious said, oh yeah, well then we want to have nothing to do with you. And the Tzionut is chazer trace. That's what they said. It's trace. You can't have anything to do with it. You can't talk about it. You can't do anything about it. Well, you got what you asked for. Why is it chazer trace? What would have happened? He says this. V'ata, ma'chiknu b'zeh ha'chared m'mashem ashu yada m'amifal ha'kados hazeh. So what did they accomplish by holding back, by not involving themselves in this? Wouldn't it have been better to participate? Yiyu mishi yiyu, whoever they are. Could they lead them gam kocham beruham akodesh? The end, he said, imagine this. If the Haredim had said, Zionism, we're in, but we're doing it our way. And we're not going to build Israel, we're going to build Eretz Yisrael. What would the nature of the state of Israel have been today if the Haredim had been involved in the beginning? Hold on, it would have been the building of the state, not the Yishuv. What did the people in the Yishuv do? What did the people in the Yishuv say about the Chalitzim? Didn't recognize them, didn't have anything to do with them. So long. What would have happened had they opened their arms and said, you know what? We'll build with you. We'll build with you. There was no Lubavitch. We'll build with you. But you know what? We're going to build. First, we're going to learn half a day, and then we're going to build. Because we're not giving up on the learning, chas v'shalom. And when we build, we're going to do it b'derech ha-Torah. And there's going to be a mezuzah on every door. And when we make food, we're going to make it kosher. And they're not going to have the mixed dancing with the horror that Israel is famous for. But we build. Then what? Look what he says. As it would have been entirely different. It would have been Toar Shel Kedusha V'Ruach Tara, maybe. But you know what he says? We'll never know, because they didn't. Ki Kvar Yadua She'or Katan Echad. Listen, he says so beautiful. A small light, Doche Choshech Shel Cheder Gadol. One little light can push out the darkness in a great big room. Why not? Why not?
When we came in 1957 for the first time to Elsie's Hall, the labor Zionists were on top of it all.
Correct.
And when a Jew from anywhere in the world would come, the first thing they would take away would be the tefillin.
I understand that, but he's not asking 1957. You made my point perfectly, beautifully. He's asking 1927, 1917. Why do these labor Zionists were on top for so long in Eretz Yisrael? Why were they on top? Because they were the ones that did it. They were the ones that built. They were the ones that were in power. 1927, 1917. Imagine if it would have been labor Zionists and Haredim. Imagine, building. Not saying, ugh, as a trip, I don't have anything to do with you. I'm going to go stay to Yerushalayim and go learn in my kolo and not acknowledge the rest of the world.
In the 1930s, they had already a big influx.
And what did they do? They went straight to Yerushalayim. What did they do? They had to work. Right? They had to. But it was already, the building of the land was already done by then. All the foundations were already poured. You can't enter right then. Now look at the state of Israel today. Who has influence today? Do the religious have an influence in the state of Israel today? You might say for better, you might say for worse. Don't say very little. No, a tremendous amount of influence. A tremendous amount of influence. A tremendous amount of influence. And we're still battling that same secular religious rift. So they don't do it correctly. There's a lot of problems in Israel. Are you kidding?
They're trying all the time to take it away.
If they're trying to take it away, what does that mean? Correct. Correct.
So maybe they would have been fighting all along.
But at least somebody would have fought the other way.
So then how did we get to this state where everything has to be inspired by the Rabbanut?
The Rabbanut was the agreement in the beginning. That Rabbanut was the agreement in the beginning. But I'm saying even much more fundamentally than that. Maybe that whole rift wouldn't have happened. You know, the problem is, it's a hashkafic question, a hindsight. But I'm asking, but you're asking me right now, what about this melting program? Do you participate or don't you participate? So if I don't participate, so are they going to say, well, if Rabbi Spalter is not in, and I'm not in this program per se, but if the Orthodox don't participate, well then forget it, we're not going to have a melting program. Is that what's going to happen?
No.
Are they going to say forget it? No.
No.
What are they going to do? They're going to have a melting program taught by who? Conservative and reform people. Right. And what do they know about Yiddishkeit? Some of them know a lot.
And some don't.
And some don't. Yeah, Rezal.
This Women's Day of Learning, this is a different
year. Right.
The first year there were no from people.
Right.
Now I'm thrilled that there's 9 people on the board and 4 that are from and the speakers.
Do you know why?
Speaking.
You know why that is?
Because we
participate.
Well, we asked or we just...
They asked us, but we also responded. They want our input. They're looking for our input. You know, people in the secular world, people who live mostly in the secular world, and the vast majority of conservative and reformed Jews do that. They go to shul how many times a year? 10? No. It's most people 3, 4, 5 times a year when they feel like it. If there's a terrible tragedy, they go to shul maybe. It's a bar mitzvah, but that's not going to shul. That's going to bar mitzvah. Okay? Maybe you have a yard site, but again, that doesn't count as going to shul because you go in for the minyan, you say your kaddish, and you leave. That's not a religious experience. They're searching, they're yearning. They don't know it sometimes, but they're looking for something, and they want to know. You know, like I could never be Orthodox, but what is it about those people that makes them be that way? Am I wrong in your experience? Am I wrong? It's absolutely correct. They're afraid of us. Unbelievably intimidated by us, terribly intimidated. Oh, they're going to look down on me, I don't do this, I don't do that. Terribly intimidated, but also unbelievably in awe of all of you. Now, here's this woman who has such meaning and such knowledge and knows the tradition, and whose children are Jewish. So how do they do that? So now, if I snub my nose at them and say, I'm not going to talk to you, you're not sure. So then I only justify everything they think about me.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
But if I open my home and I say, I'd love to have you for Shabbos, when can you come? So the first time they'll say no. The second time they'll say no. Maybe the third time they'll say yeah. Because they really want to come. They really want to know, what's the secret? What are we missing? So what do you want? Go to Milton or not go to Milton? Should I participate? There's a SAGE program. Every rabbi of the synagogue goes and teaches classes at the JCC. Well, I'm not going to teach with all these rabbis. I'm not going to sit with all these rabbis. But who knows how many people you can influence by going out in the world? What's the other option? Why not? Did I answer the question?
In a way.
In a way.
No, my father, what I say.
Yeah.
If you talk, teach in the name of Melton's plan.
Yes.
You certainly are not an Orthodox.
That's not true. Not true at all. Not true. Go look at the course schedule. They have all kinds of different people. And to be honest with you, most people that they get are firm in some way. Have some connection to Orthodoxy. You know why? Because it's very hard to find learned conservative lay people. Very hard. They can't find them. Go check the course schedule of Melton and see who's there. Now, the one thing I'll tell you is this. The one thing I'm reluctant to do is I won't sit on a panel and give the Orthodox, conservative, and reform positions on X, Y, or Z. Mm-hmm. Right. What's the Orthodox? That I won't do. No, because then, to me, it gives the impression that it's just flavors of ice cream. You could be Orthodox, you could be reform, you could be conservative. So this is what the Orthodox rabbi says, this is what the conservative rabbi says. I did sit on a panel on medical ethics with an imam and a Christian priest. That I was willing to do, because it's not different flavors. You're giving the Jewish interpretation. For Jewish people, per se. But in Orthodox conservative reform, I won't do. But I it's important for me to convey that, you know, it's not all different flavors of ice cream. I had lunch with a Lutheran minister last week who wanted to know more about Judaism. So he said, tell me, I want to understand. You're Orthodox and they're conservative and then this one's reform. So do you believe that these are all just paths, you know, different ways of approaching God? Because in Christianity, I think they have that. I'm a Lutheran, you're Episcopalian, the ways, I don't know, whatever, but we're all sort of, you know, going into the same way, and everybody has his own way. Do you believe that? So what did I say?
No.
No, of course not. You know, I'm Orthodox, I'm right. This is the Derek.
That's a touchy question.
Touchy.
I'm saying, if he repeats that too,
then oh, please. I would hope that they would. If I didn't think I was right, then what would I be teaching?
I don't know. I was just curious how you came across.
Probably. How do I come across to you?
Well, I'm on your side. Right.
Arrogant or self-confident?
Self-confident.
Well, a little arrogant, too. But that's okay. Why can't we? No, it's not every rabbi. I hope not. I hope it's every Orthodox person. Why can't we have the self-confidence to say, this is the way of the Jewish people? This is the Derech Hashem. And I'm not going to apologize for it. And because somebody 100 years ago decided it wasn't for him, and he started another movement, and somebody 200 years ago started it wasn't for him, sorry, I've been doing it for 3,000 years. 3,100. 3,100. Which is right? And there have been all kinds of different movements to break off from my movement over the years. And what happened to them? Eventually the truth bubbles to the top. Sometimes it takes 50 years. Sometimes it takes 100 years. Sometimes it could take 200 years. But eventually, the MS, the truth, rises to the top. Yeah, Mrs. Book.
I took an article out of the Jewish press.
Oh, I have it. I forgot to read it.
I was supposed to make copies for everybody. It's by Jeff Freeman. And the article says that he's unorthodox. And the picture shows him Orthodox.
Right.
And he explains what being unorthodox is.
Yeah.
Going against the grain. Everybody does this. We don't.
Well, it's interesting. The word Orthodox we were never really defined as Orthodox Jews. We were Jews. No, we were Jewish. And then Reform was Reform. And Orthodox was a pejorative term to mean that you're not Reform.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It means in they had this also in Jewish history. In the times of the Beis Hamikdash, the Bais Sheni, there were what was called the Tzedukim. Right? Tzedukim. Right? What was the other group called? The Perushim. What does Perushim mean? The Separatists. Now, is that a nice name to call somebody who's from Jew? Right, Tzedukim sound like the good guys. And then the Separatists, the Perushim. So they were the Reform. Oh, we're Reformists. What is Reform? Someone is Reform. We have Reform. We need to reform our educational system. We need to reform our governing. And we need to reform our religion from that old archaic way against those Orthodox. Nowadays, how do we wear Orthodox? Well, it's a badge of pride. I'm Orthodox. church. So I said to this minister, I said, no, I mean, I have to believe this. If it were up to me, every Jew would be living a Jewish life the way I define it. It's not okay for Jews to be conservative or reform. And we have to say it that way. That's not a viable path to find the way of God, to live in God's love, in God's world. Yeah.
30 or 40 years ago, we never had this attitude. We were always feeling that we have to stick to our own separate group because they were influencing us.
Thank God. I agree with you. I agree with you. And I understand that. But thank God, the Orthodox movement has grown and has flourished. And now we have women who come to the Parsha Shir regularly, and they come to the Halacha Shir, and the men come and learn at night, and people are more knowledgeable and much more self-confident than they ever were. You know, and so we don't feel the need to really be apologetic, and we need to say things the way they are. And so I won't deny that 30 or 40 years ago that was true, and that it was more dangerous, and it was something to be concerned about. But nowadays, I think that our families are so strong. And our children, thank God, are raised in homes that are strong, that really are strong. They have so much to give. So instead of being afraid of what your child's going to pick up by playing with a kid in the street, maybe that kid in the street will pick up something, pick up a bracha from here or from there, and come home to his parents and say, how come I don't say brachas before I eat my bread? Malam Chumash? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Oh, I just want to add. One thing I will do, I'm speaking at Temple Israel on, I don't know, some Sunday next month, and they, because I was very specific about how they titled it. The title of the topic is Agreeing to Disagree. Okay? And because I have to make it clear, and I do when I speak at Temple Israel, that I don't think that the Reform Judaism is a viable option when it comes to Judaism. And I said to Sam Ole, I mean, I come in there and I talk to, you know, Rabbi Klein is a very nice man, and he comes in and he'll say straight out, Rabbi Spolter thinks that I'm totally wrong. Right. But at least if I don't say it, if somebody doesn't go into Temple Emmanuel over here. If I don't go into Emmanuel and tell them there's a historical way, this is the way Jews have lived, how would they know? Who's going to tell them?
What is the way about?
It's like a breakfast Sunday morning lecture series that they have every month, every 2 months. So he called me a long time ago and asked me to speak. So as long as I make it clear that it's not vanilla, chocolate, or strawberry, different flavors. But I believe that there's the true flavor, and everything else is, you know, everything else is tofu-y. And so then, of course he knows that's what I'm going to do, that he likes it. It's fun for him. What? Maybe he portrays me after I leave as a radical, as archaic radical. But I've got one thing on my side. What's that? Tape it? Oh, well, I don't know. Okay. Okay. Chaya Sarah, what page are we on? Emmanuel? Why not? Why not?
But it's not for a prayer. It's not for a service.
What's that?
Just don't go there.
If I don't go there, who else is going to go there? Who's going to represent the firm community? Who's going to teach them about orthodoxy and about tradition? Who? In ein ani lanu, mi lanu. V'kesha ani la'atzmi, ma'ani. V'im lo achshav. Because next week, or next year, or next decade, most of those people won't be members of that shul, I guarantee you that. I'm very confident that in 10 years, if Mashiach hasn't come, we're still around. The people who are members of the shul, if they haven't moved away, they'll still be members of the shul. But about that shul, hard to say. You never know. Okay. So let's see if I can fit my introduction into the parsha. How are we going
to
do this? What?
It's a model to be young.
Why? How do you mean? And I say honestly, I can only say this standing on the shoulders of my predecessors. You know, Rabbi Prayer passed away just a week and a half ago. I can't even imagine the fights that he had to fight. I mean, maybe he wouldn't have said it this way because he was really building up from a very, very low status. From the beginning. Yeah.
He was something else.
I hope you're saying for good.
Cool.
Yeah.
He was the bridge to the yeshivas. All of us asked anyone here who sent their children to the yeshivas, and we now are involved in the large yeshiva. They came from Young Israel.
Sure.
Families.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, but they weren't all starting in Young Israel, right? They didn't all start there.
Most did.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. The Young Israel was the one that fed the yeshiva.
Correct.
Right.
And whose idea was it to build a yeshiva?
Also Young Israel.
Dami did, and Rabbi Prayer was involved. And whose idea was it to build the Young Israel over here? And the Young Israel of Northwest? And the Young Israel of Southfield?
Rabbi Prayer was part of the Akiva also.
Right, to see the future and to see the needs of the community.
But he
from what I understand, he was very involved. I understand he was very involved.
He taught the lot, so I think we
have a Young Israel. That's right.
You know. I know, I was sitting there.
Okay. And that's what he pushed. Right, but that wasn't necessarily so popular at the time.
It wasn't popular.
I should say this, I'm standing on his shoulders. When he got up in Shul, he had to fight people to send them to a Jewish high school. He had to fight to send even to a Jewish elementary school, a lot of people in Orthodox Shuls. Not everybody who was a member of Young Israel was Shomer Shabbos back then, I'm quite sure.
Right.
Quite sure.
Sure.
So, and where are their children? If he won that fight, where are their children? Their children are in Bes Yehuda, are in Akiva now, their grandchildren now, or in Israel, many of them. So I can now say this, it's nice to be young, standing on his shoulders. He fought that fight so that we can now move to the next generation and worry about what about the greater community. That's right. That's right. We move on. Move forward. Okay. 106. The name of this parsha is called Chaye Sarah. Okay? Because it's about the life of
Sarah.
Right. There's only one problem.
It's actually the death of Sarah.
It has nothing to do with the life of Sarah. Nothing at all. So then why do we call this? Now, you can't imagine, Chazal, I know the division, the parsha is 52 parsios, but it's not by coincidence. The name of the parsha always has something to do with the parsha itself. Lech Lecha is about Abraham's journey into Eretz Yisrael, right? He's becoming Abraham. Vayera El Avram is about God appearing to Abraham at the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. It's about Abraham's awakening as an Av. Chaye Sarah is about the life of Sarah. What happens in the second pasuk of Chaye Sarah? Chaye Sarah, Mea Shana, the Esim Shana, the Sheva Shanim, Shinei Chaye Sarah. Sarah was 100 years and 20 years and 7 years old. These are the years of the life of Sarah. Now, obviously, what's the big problem with that pasuk?
When she died.
What's the big problem? That's not the problem. We'll get to that problem in a second. The pasuk itself raises a difficult dilemma. In the language of the pasuk.
Why they separate?
Good, right. Ne'ah shana, besim shana, b'sheva shanim. Why does it say 100 years and 7 years and 20 years and 7 years?
100 years she was like 20, and at 20 she was like at 7. I mean, she was young at heart.
Young at heart. Okay, that's what Rashi says. Beautiful idea. I don't want to expand beyond that. Okay, ne'ah shana, besim shana, b'sheva shanim. I'll also say 120 and 7 are like at different years, different. Very different times in your life.
Stages of life.
Very, yes. Very different. Yes. So at 7, she was a child, probably. At 20, she was already married, a grown woman. And at 100, what was different at 100? She had children.
She had children, yeah.
And she retained that same...
Aura.
Right, aura, I would say. Right, it's a good word. In her lifetime. Okay, so, fine, it's called Chaye Sarah, great. So let's learn about the life of Sarah. How's it there? Vatama Sarah. She died the Kiryas Arba Hi Hebron the Eretz Canaan. Vayavo Abraham Lisboda Sarah Valiv Kosha. She died in Kiryas Arba in Hebron. And Abraham came to Lisboda Sarah to mourn for Sarah, Lisboda Valiv Kosha, and to cry for her. Okay? What's the problem?
Where was he?
Where was he? He says Rashi. Vayavo Avraham. Now this is, you don't know how long afterwards this was. It's unclear how long and what's on afterwards. Rashi says, Yibir Sheva. What was Avraham doing in Be'er Sheva? She's in Hebron, he's in Be'er Sheva. Just interesting to point out. But they had different missions, they had different responsibilities. Okay? I don't want to talk about this first section of the Torah. I want to skip. That's interesting. So we're left with the question, why is it called Chaye Sarah? What about this parsha reveals the life of Sarah? Okay, and we'll, hopefully we'll have enough time. Right, but how? to answer this question. Pasuk 100, page 108, Pasuk Aleph in chapter 24. The Abraham Zakein Bab Vayamim. Abraham was old, well on in years. Vashem Beirach is Abraham Bakol. God blessed Abraham with everything. Bakol. What it, and literally, what does it mean literally in every, with everything?
He had a son.
Think so? That's literally what it means?
No,
the chat, what does it mean?
Every
what could it right? I mean, his wealth, prominence, he had respect, he had his health. Can't minimize that one. Bakol. He had a child. Bakol. God blesses Abraham with everything. Okay, when I say though, anytime you say, how are you? And you say, everything couldn't be better. What's the next word?
But.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, right. You know, there's always a
something.
God gave Abraham everything. It's impossible. There is no everything. Because if there's everything, then there's nothing more to yearn for. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Abraham bakol. God blessed Abraham with everything. One gets the sense that there's something missing. And we'll see immediately what's missing. Okay? No, but just look at Rashi Bakol. Aleph Bereget Abraham Bakol. Bakol Ole Bigamatria Ben. Bakol in Hebrew. Bet is 2. Kaf is 20. Lamed is 30. How much is that? 20 plus 2 plus 30?
52.
52. Right? What's the Gematria of Ben? Bet is 2, Yud is 50, 52. U'me'achar shahaya lo ben, hayatzarech lahasi'o isha. He had to marry her off to a woman. Now this points out that two of the mepharshim that I was looking at, I spent a little bit of time reading this, both the Ramban and the Rabbeinu Bachya. Rabbeinu Bachya Ibn Pakuda lived in Spain, I think, Italy or Spain?
No,
one of the Sephardic countries, right? And they're both based their pshatim very much on the Kabbalah. So they say the word bakol is a key word. Ramban really develops this extensively. He says the following. This is worth stopping on. He said that there's a following midrash. The midrash says the following. Here we are. Midrash says the following. Hashem Berach Abraham Bako. Rabbi Meir, this is the Gemara in Baba Basra. Rabbi Meir Omer, Shelo Hai Shelo Bat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him everything, a son. But Shelo Hai Shelo Bat. So what's the bracha? Don't take it literally. The bracha was that he had a son, but no daughters. Phew! That's what it means. What's the? You have to pay for a chasana. There you go.
You have to marry him off. Yeah.
You know, my cousin is getting married in Israel now, and he lives in yeshiva, in Shivat Neve Dekalim. Anybody know where Neve Dekalim is? Neve Dekalim is in the middle of the Gaza Strip. Okay. What type of yeshiva do you think it is in Neve Dekalim? It's not a Haredi yeshiva. I'll tell you that. He's a Haredi with a big white yarmulke. That's what they call him. So anyway, the Rosh Yeshiva, they're getting married. The Rosh Yeshiva told them they're not allowed to spend more than $6,000 on the wedding. He won't allow them to spend more. So my mother's complaining. I say, complaining? That's great. It's good. You know, what do they need to waste so much money on? So you invite less friends. I said it in a morbid way that I won't repeat. But think about, you know, how many people are really your really, really, really close friends? And it's very important to you to be at that wedding. But if you didn't invite anybody, you said, whoever wants to come can come. These people would come. How many people do we all have that would be like that? Each of us have maybe 10 friends, not more than that.
Maybe a little more.
Yeah?
Maybe a little more.
Maybe. Okay, she's looking around. Right?
I think so.
So, right? So everybody else you invite is then, you know, casual acquaintances. So you need to spend $100 a person on that, casual acquaintance. I know you, I like you, very nice. Do I need to, you know, that's what you need to do? Except that's what we do. 500 people, 600 people at a wedding. And then we had a rule, no more than $6,000, the community would be much better off. So, yeah, I'm gonna have an edict.
I thought they said they were greater.
That's the difference between a shul rav and a rosh yeshiva, right? The rosh yeshiva tells you what to do, you do it. The shul rabbi tells you what to do.
Take it under advice.
Thank you, Rabbi. No, and then you say, Rabbi, I love the speech.
Maybe there are some cheer.
I'm sure they do. But then there are the concerns, and you know, how can we not invite this one and not invite that one? I'm sure they do love the speech. But they take it under advisement. Okay. Yes, Aviva.
You know, you say this is like this. This what was so down.
Yeah.
You don't say it's like the eulogy of Sarah and eulogy.
There's no text for the eulogy, but we know that Abraham did deliver the eulogy for his wife, but we don't know what he said.
Oh.
Yeah. It was probably good. Okay. What does Bakal mean? So it says in that's one opinion in the Midrash, that he didn't have a daughter. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bas Haishalo, he had a daughter. Acherim Omrim, Acherim, others say, Bas Haishalo U Bakal Sma. What was her name? Her name was Bakal. Hashem Beirach as Abraham Bakal. God bless Abraham with a daughter named Bakal. The problem with a Midrash like that, says the Ramban, is a casual observer, when he hears that Midrash, seems to think to himself, what a silly midrash. It sounds so awkward and so off, you know, off the wall. Like Abraham had a daughter named Bakal. We never hear about this daughter. Who names their daughter Bakal? What in the world is the midrash talking about? And you know what I derive from this? That the rabbis were foolish men just joking around. First of all, they hate women, misogynists. They can't stand women because they didn't want to have daughters. Second of all, they're foolish. A daughter named Bakal, we don't even see that in the Midrash. Now, and by the way, is this something that I'm making up, or people actually think this?
I'm sure people
do. Yeah, okay, you don't think this, okay? The misogynist one for sure. Says the Ramban, the reason why it was a blessing not to have a daughter was because if Abraham had a daughter and he married her off to a gentleman, a nice man, the daughter has to follow the customs of the man.
Mm-hmm.
So what would have happened? She would have been subservient, subordinate to someone who didn't follow the Abrahamic tradition. So therefore, God blesses Abraham not to have an heir that wouldn't be able to follow in his spiritual legacy. Okay? Not that we hate women. Okay, that's the blessing. What about Bakal? So Ramban says, if you know anything about Kabbalah, which most lay people don't know, you know that the word kol is a catchphrase for one of the attributes of God. He says it's the eighth attribute of the 13 attributes of God, kol. And this idea of kol represents the wholeness and the totality of God's dominion in the world. Another word for it is Knesset Yisrael, the wholeness of Israel, the concept of the Jewish people, the concept of the wholeness of God's influence and involvement in the world. So, and I'm watering it down tremendously because this is the extent of my understanding of it, but it goes much deeper than that. And both Ramban and Rabbeinu Bachya both say this idea, that the Torah is alluding to a very deep idea, and the Midrash is cluing you in. V'ashem beirach et Abraham bakol, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God bless Abraham, that through him, God's entire influence in the world would be manifested through God. And when the Midrash says that it was a bat, a daughter, the daughter is the idea in the Midrash of representing a child that represents the idea that it will come through your offspring and through your efforts and through your work. So the Midrash saying, others say that Abraham had a daughter, and the daughter's name was Bakal, so Abraham had a legacy, and that legacy was the totality of the Jewish people, of the religion of the Jewish people. So what did Chazal do? They said, listen, we're going to say something very complicated, very deep, very involved. If you get it, you got it. And if you don't, you'll think it's foolish. You're lost. But never to think that the words of Chazal were not deep, and well thought out, and very, very complex, and very, very important. How much time was? Wait.
So
okay.
Saying that Bat would mean literally his legacy. That is his.
Yes, he says the word Bat. Let me see if I can find it. He says it over here. Bakol, blah 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 blah. The Hamidah Hazot Haitala Abraham Kibat. This Bat, this Midah, this attribute was like a daughter to him. Kihu Ha'isa Chesed. Abraham was a man of kindness. V'Nahedbo. Okay, and he would act in this way. Ulakach amu achirim, that's why the others had said in the Midrash, Shein habracha hazot shibarech bakol, romezet al shaholi bat misharaisto. It wasn't that he had a child, or he didn't have a child, aval he romezet inyan gadol, it's a great idea. Sheberech oto b'midah, shehibhotoch midat hakol. That God blessed Abraham with his attribute that was from God's attribute of kol. What does kol mean? Everything. Meaning what? The totality of godliness, of the allness, the completeness of God. That somehow God blessed Abraham with that, he imbued him with that spirituality that Abraham then represented and transmitted that spiritual legacy onward. Okay? It's very important to know this. Okay? So Abraham, that's gone. Pasuk Bet. Probably. What? Very good. Beautiful idea. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Bakol, Mikol, Kol. Very deep idea. I think you're absolutely correct. Without a doubt. No, I'm saying, but just that idea of Kol, yeah, absolutely. Bakol, Mikol, Kol. You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct, Mr. Weber. But Vayomer Avraham el Avdo Zekan Beito Hamoshel Bechol Asher Lo. Avraham said to his servant Zekan Beito, the eldest of his house, Hamoshel Bechol Asher Lo. What does that mean? Hamoshel Bechol Asher Lo, the one who ruled all that was his. Who is he talking to?
The servant.
Oh, he has there.
Mm-hmm. Eliezer, the servant.
Okay. Now, let me read it again. And just imagine you didn't know that it was Eliezer. And I gave you this description. Vayomer Avraham, or it says Abdo, but if I said the following way, what if I read it the following way? Vayomer Avraham el Zekan Beito. Abraham said to the elders of his house, Hamoshel b'chol asher lo, who controls through everything that Abraham had. Who would you think Abraham was talking to?
The son.
Right. Absolutely correct. So what's the problem? The problem is, where's Yitzchak? What happened to Yitzchak? Who's running Abraham's household? Eliezer. Who's the eldest of the household? Eliezer. Who's in control? Eliezer. Now let's see, what is he asking? See, now yarcha tachat yerechi, put your hand under my thigh. Why do you do that?
That's how they
swore. Okay, very good. And I'm going to make you swear by the God of the heavens and the God of the earth. I said, that you shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. Rather, you have to go rather, El Arkid El Maladati, to my land, my homeland, my birthplace, and take a wife for my son for Yitzchak. What's the problem?
It's also amazing because God sends him away because his birthplace is not the way there. He can.
Well, the Mefarshim argue about what he means when he says Maladati.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're correct. Rashi says Maladati means Haran and Aram Naharayim. And he doesn't go to Haran and Aram Naharayim. So the Ramban says it's impossible that that's what Abraham means. It's very clear that when he says my birthplace, what he really means is my parents' home. And that Eliezer does exactly as he's told. Because otherwise you'd have to explain, according to the way Rashi reads it, Eliezer doesn't listen, goes to a different place, and it ends up for the good anyway. You understand what I'm saying? So therefore Ramban would rather say that when Abraham says El Archive El Moladati, he doesn't mean literally my birthplace, he means the place where my family is from. Okay. What's the problem with these two chicken? What's the obvious problem? Where's Yitzchak?
Is he away from
Yeshiva? In Yeshiva.
Probably.
In the trick, they can identify with that so well. He's in Yeshiva.
Yeah, well, that's
okay, ask, how old is Yitzchak?
30? 37.
Okay, older than 37. 40. He's 40.
Because if he had him when he was 100.
As a single 42-year-old woman, this is, somebody gave this to me from Newsweek, every Jewish mother's worst nightmare. I just happen to have it here, it's funny. As a 42-year-old woman, I'm no longer considered just a late bloomer. I'm a lost cause. I just have to comment. She's stretching because everybody sort of doesn't like her or ignores her because she's not married. Did you read it?
Yep.
The whole thing?
Where was it?
It was in Newsweek from August.
Oh.
In Newsweek, you know, and I understand her pain. You have to understand a woman's pain. Mm-hmm. If you've been trying to get married and trying to get married and trying to get married, our community really does single out single people, not necessarily intentionally, but it's very hard to be a single person on Shabbos and Yom Tov and all the families and all the children. Very, very hard. It's very painful. But she writes at the end, her mother says, I can still get married, I said to my mother one day. Well, she says, you've had a lot of opportunities to get married if you had wanted to take them. That doesn't mean it's over, I smiled. No, replied my mother, but some people never meet the right one. She says, this is the end. It's my fondest desire in life to prove them all wrong. I have a fantasy in which I meet a younger man who's wealthier than Bill Gates, sweeter than Mr. Rogers, and better looking than the late JFK Jr. Then I wonder, will the Jews accept me again? More to the point, will I want them back? Interesting question. So you want to know why she's not married?
She wants too much.
Because she's looking for a younger man, richer than Bill Gates. You know, might as well look at the JFK and sweeter than Mr. Rogers.
Forget it.
Doesn't exist.
No.
But here's my question.
Thank you for bringing back the Yitzhak. I really appreciate that.
Abraham came back from wherever he was to eulogize Sarah. Where was he? His mother just died.
Who, Yitzhak?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yitzhak doesn't have... Oh, I didn't get that. I skipped that. Where's Yitzhak at his mother's funeral?
Nothing.
Nowhere to be found. We don't know.
They don't even mention him.
Nowhere to be found.
It's his mother. Now, it's true he just went through a harrowing experience, a traumatic experience. His father nearly killed him.
When you say it that way, right, you know. Without a doubt, here's the question. His father didn't just nearly kill him. You have to say it this way. Mm-hmm. He let his father nearly kill him.
Yes.
Right? It didn't just happen.
Right.
It wasn't his father took around, hey, Yitzhak, hey, freeze! No, it didn't happen that way.
But, you get the feeling that he was a very docile person to have gone and done everything that his father asked him to do, to go up and not to resist the Akedah.
Good. Where is he now?
That's exactly, and now his mother dies. He has to have been a sense.
How does he feel about his mother?
I assume he's very attached to her.
You don't have to assume it. You can prove it to me.
I can prove it to you because
Prove it to me. You're looking at the wrong page.
I think his mother was attached to him and when...
Prove it to me. Come on. Come on, ladies. Prove it to me. Prove to me.
He did everything that his mother...
How do you know? Prove it to me from this week's Parsha. How do you know Yitzhak was a mama's boy?
He picked a wife just like...
Whoa, you're getting there. Okay, you're getting there. Prove to me from the Chumash. You're really close. Really close. The Torah says, page 120. Page, Pasuk Samech of Zion, 67. Yitzchak brought her to the tent of Sarah, her mother. So he took her as his wife, and he loved her. Yitzchak was consoled after his mother. Yitzchak was, when his mother died, was unconsolable. He could find no comfort, no solace, no rest until Rivka enters his tent. He was unbelievably attached to his mother. And there's Miriam Sila. So where did Yitzchak at her funeral? You love your mother so much, you can't even show up on the Leviah. So we look at Eliezer. Oh, you're going to be really mad at me. I'm running out of time. Look at Eliezer. Who's running Abraham's household?
Eliezer.
Where's Yitzchak? time for you to get married. He's every Jewish mother's worst nightmare, right? Not married, you're 40 years old. Where do you find a girl? So what does his father finally do? If you're not going to find a girl, I'm going to find one for you. Who found Abraham's wife?
Who what?
Who found Abraham's wife? Abraham's wife. Who found Abraham's wife? Abraham found Abraham's wife. Who found Yaakov's wife?
Yaakov.
Who married, who found Joseph's wife, interestingly? Who found Joseph's wife?
No.
Who found Joseph's wife? The king of Egypt gave Joseph a wife. Interesting. Who found Moses' wife?
Moshe
found his own wife.
Yeah.
Right? Who found David's wife? David! All the great guys!
His wife.
And his other wife right here. Who found Shlomo's wife? Shlomo.
So Yitzhak's only
son
did not find his own.
Yitzhak, time to get married. No! Go on a date, for God's sake! Take a phone call. Call the shotgun. What happens?
The local girls
weren't. So what? The local girls weren't for Yaakov either. What does he do? Yaakov, Yitzhak and Rivka, basically the mother, she knows. She says to the husband, there's no way, I don't want it to happen, and I want you to send him away. And what does he do? He does exactly that. So Yaakov goes and finds himself a wife. What about Yitzhak? I don't want you to take a wife for my son. What? No, the shotgun. Forget shotgun.
No, he did not want.
The shotgun, what does the shotgun do? A shotgun says to the girl, you got to pick up the phone and talk to her at least. There's no shotgun here. He went. He found her. He picked her. He chose her. He brought her home.
And Zelda?
It was a good choice. Did a good job. She got to the Shemaya. Where's Yitzchak? And Abraham says, by the way, on one condition, there's one thing you cannot do under any circumstances. What is that? No, he does not say that. That is not the end all be all. The worst thing would not be to marry a local girl.
Don't
let Yitzchak leave Eretz Canaan. Meaning what? What if Yitzchak wants to leave? You should not bring him over there. As if Eliezer would say, hey Yitzchak, we're going to the Haran. What would Yitzchak say? Okay, we're going to the Haran.
Because he was promised that land and he wanted.
I know, but I'm trying to point out to you, Yitzchak is unbelievably passive throughout his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
First, obviously, with the Akedah. But here also, who's running Abraham's household? Not him.
No.
Who's getting married? Not him. Who's burying the mother?
Not him.
Where's Yitzchak?
And then he wants to go away.
No, going away. I just want to see you in. I got to stop. We're running out of time. Skip to the end. 118. Torah says, the whole shebang with Rivka, right? The deal, the story, the camels, the blah, 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 very nice. Shulami agrees to come. Pasuk Samach Aleph. Vatakam Rivka v'na'al Roseah. 118. Mrs. Weiss, you with me? 118?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Samach Aleph. Vatakam Rivka v'na'al Roseah. Rivka and her wife, when girls came up. Vatikavna'al Hagmalim. Vatelachna acharei ha'ish. They rode on the camels and they came after the man. Vayikach ha'evedes Rivka vayelach. Bye, see you later. Never going to come back. Sorry. Samas bet. The Yitzchak ba libo be'er lachai roi. Yitzchak is coming, came, from coming be'er lachai roi, from having gone to be'er lachai roi. V'hu yoshev be'er et ha'negev. For he dwelt in the Negev, in the south. When you read a pasuk like that, usually what we do when we read a pasuk like that, what do? We just skip to the next pasuk. Okay, fine. We ignore it. We gotta go, right? Yeah. What in the world was Yitzchak doing in the Be'er Lachai Roi?
I don't know.
Rashi. Rashi says.
Gone to pray.
No. Samach Lev, Rashi, the second column. So halach lahavi hagar la'avraham aviv shiyesa ena. Holy moly. I'm not going to touch that one. That he went to go find Hagar and bring her back. Okay. Very, just really interesting. Whole family dynamic thing, whatever. Leave that one to go. Okay? Says, what?
Next year.
Says Rabbeinu Bechayai. Okay? Rabbeinu Bechayai says, go on Rabbeinu Bechayai, let me see if I can find it. That's what was I looking for? What am I looking for? Okay. Here we are. Rabban asked this question. Okay? Where's the last time Be'er Lachai Ro'i appears? Be'er Lachai Ro'i appears. What is Be'er Lachai Ro'i? Does anybody know?
When they were talking about maybe when she was praying to God.
Who?
When they were talking about Hagar and she was...
Really good, Ms. Ellison. Very good. Good guess.
Well.
Wow, so why does Rashi say, very good, right? Why does Rashi say Hagar?
Hagar's prayers had been answered.
Correct. Here we are, 1 second. Remember when Hagar ran away?
Yeah.
Right? She ran away, blah, 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 blah. And God saved her.
Her needs were answered.
Right, her needs were answered. What was that? In Lech Lecha, I think, right? See, before Hagar comes back. Here we are. Okay, I'll read it for you. Hagar, remember, Hagar ran away, and God, the angel, comes to her and says, you got to come back. He says, Alkein karan be'er, be'er lachai ro'i. The name of the place that Hagar saw the angel was Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Hinei ben Kadesh u'ben Baret. Between Kadesh and Baret. That's what Rashi mentions Hagar. So where is Yitzchak coming back from? From Be'er Lachai Ro'i. What is Yitzchak doing there?
He's praying.
Says Ramban, very good. Says Ramban, Yitachin. He's coming Mibo. There's a place. Shaya Yitzchak Holech Tamir Al Makom Ahu. Yitzchak always went there. Kihu Lo Makom Tfilah. Who is a place of prayer and solitude. Ba'avur Hiraot Sam HaMalach. Who Yosef, the Eretz HaNegev, Karov Misham. Yitzchak could not leave the Negev because the most spiritual place in the world for him was Be'er Lachai Ro'i. After the Akedah, where does Yitzchak go? He didn't see the angel. He doesn't hear the angel. His angel is in Be'er Lachai Ro'i. That's where he davens. That's where he prays. In a sense, his mother's in Hebron, his father's in Be'er Sheva, and where's Yitzchak? More importantly, he's alone. Yitzchak is alone. Because that's the way he finds his relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, alone. Abraham is out in the world. Abraham is doing. Abraham is involved. Abraham is the doer. Abraham is the go-getter. What's Yitzchak? Yitzchak is a solitary soul. The lonely man of faith. Him praying to God. Finding God in the middle of the field. That's who he was. That's what he was all about. Now, there's much more to say about Yitzchak, and no time. So we'll have to stop here. But we started with, why is it called Chayei Sarah? What is every Jewish woman's, every Jewish mother's, not worst nightmare, but greatest dream?
Son shouldn't get married.
Greatest, no. What is a Jewish mother's greatest dream?
To see the next generation.
To see that she's passed on her dedication to Kadosh Baruch Hu the same way she has it, to see that her son follows in her footsteps. So what is Chayei Sarah? When is he consoled after his mother's death? When Yitzchak finds a soulmate who will allow him to continue to be the person that he is.
Yeah.
And we'll see later on, next week especially, that even in his own life, Yitzchak remained a solitary figure. Even with his children, sometimes not for good. Even with his children, and especially with his wife, he retained that solitude. He retained that aloneness, in a sense. But in a sense, that's how he retained his dedication and devotion to God. Okay, we'll stop here.